to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
This morning with Rod Oram. Moreno, Rod, how are you?
Atamaria, Rachel, very well, thank you.
It's lovely to chat to you. It's been a wee while. You've been cycling around the country, is that right?
From Cape Reinga to Bluff on tour out of Roa. 28 days, absolute wonderful adventure.
That sounds like a fantastic adventure. Well, we're all on a very different kind of adventure at the moment with our Ahui lockdown period that we are experiencing. And we want to talk a little bit about some of the economic impacts that that's going to have on New Zealand. And I guess broadly as well, what this is going to look like for the near and the far future. I just wanted to put a first question forward. Where does all the money that the government is using to bail out businesses and support people's wage subsidies, where is all that money actually coming from, Rod?
Rather wonderfully, for hundreds of years now, money has been, pardon this expression, a fiction. We've moved on from needing an ounce of gold or whatever to have a transaction. So money is created. In this case, it's largely being created by the Reserve Bank through what's known as quantitative easing. And that enables the Reserve Bank to buy government bonds initially, but that's been widened out to now include corporate debt and local government debt is, I think, on the way too. So that means that they can then buy those bonds, put them on their balance sheet, and then create, and that the cash then goes into the banking system.
Right.
That's one side. But on the other side, of course, the government can borrow money and increase its debt. Now, our government went into this crisis with far lower government debt than pretty much any other developed country, down around 20, in the low 20% of GDP. So that gives the government a lot of headroom. So that's basically where the two sources of money are coming from.
So we've seen a multi-pronged approach so far from the government in terms of economically supporting the country. And also we're starting to see businesses as well picking up some of the slack too and putting some money in there too. What are your thoughts on the strategies that we've seen so far from both government and business?
I've identified four themes, and I'll touch on each of them very briefly, both from a business point of view, where I've been spending most of my time, as always, but then also government. So the four are foresight, innovation, resilience, and competence. So, for example, in business, a number of major businesses were already thinking at the turn of the year that something's going on, and by early to late January, they were activating their crisis management teams. Now, it turns out they were actually quite good at crises in New Zealand because we get a lot of them, from particularly from physical circumstances, earthquakes and the like. So companies have some good structures there. This is very different because a crisis is failure of a particular piece of infrastructure or a one-off thing, short-lived. So they very quickly were thinking about how to adapt that to a longer-term process. So, for example, in foodstuffs, who own, Pack and Save, New World, Foursquare stores. Well, sorry, it's a co-op. The owners own them, but it's the co-op that runs, brings that all together. They just said, well, this is actually what the business plan is for 2020. This is not some crisis management. We're shifting to a very different business model.
Right.
And so that the second one is then innovation. And we're seeing some really terrific responses all the way through the economy. I think as a result of that, we've shown a remarkable degree of resilience in the economy, considering this is an, words obviously fail us and we tend to repeat the same one, the absolute one. This is utterly unlike anything that's happened before. The economy here and around the world is a kind of a perpetual motion machine that can only handle very small variations in that level of activity. So a recession where the economy shrinks by 1 or 2% is a drama. But now we're looking at the New Zealand economy, economic activity probably falling about 15 or 17%, which is the most astonishing shock. I mean, that's how long it took. 3 years to get to that in the Great Depression,
right,
from 1929 to 1932. And then the last one is confidence. I think that nothing's perfect, but a lot is being delivered. And I think that's giving both business and government confidence that they can innovate very fast and deliver, knowing that the tasks have hardly begun. It is actually only going to get more complicated from here.
So that's something that maybe we can touch on now, actually, because we've talked a lot about the immediate term impacts because, of course, people have lost business, they've lost livelihood immediately as a result of this virus. But we're looking at radical change for the foreseeable future, basically, here. What do you think some of our biggest differences we're going to see in the next decade, I guess, because of this might be, Rod?
Look, in my own mind... and again, this is an artificial construct. I think very broadly, it could go sort of one of three ways. The first one is we could try to patch together what we had before going into this crisis. And again, all the people I've been talking to think we can't go back to where we were. So we need to go forward from here work on quite a different future. But then I think it gets difficult because a crisis like that, by human nature, brings out the very it magnifies our existing traits.
Mm-hmm.
So some people will respond magnificently, other people will respond very selfishly. And I think there's going to be a great contest here for what that future looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope that the high degree of cooperation and reciprocity and giving people slack, not to go off and, you know, do their own thing, but to sort of respond within careful principles, mm-hmm. really important principles, but very practically. Let me just give you this one example. We have this wonderful world bubble, and the government didn't tell us that, you know, you could go out for a walk, but keep far apart. But I've seen it on my walks. It's quite wonderful where a family's all together, lots of kids, and as other people approach them, somebody in the group shouts bubble, and they all come together
yeah.
in a tight group.
Yeah.
I think that's completely brilliant. I obviously tend to rather look on the bright side and look for the better nature of people.
Mm.
But I think that it's completely... in our grasp to come out of this stronger, more resilient, more cohesive as a nation, more reciprocity, in terms of support and the rest. So that's very broadly how, at least I hope it'll work out, but I can offer you absolutely no guarantee that's going to happen.
I think that a bit of hope is a good thing very much, though, at this point, Rod. So it's lovely to chat to you this morning. Thank you very much, Rod Oram, for taking the time. We'll speak to you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you. Keep well. And just wonderful you're running a virtual studio with you all atomized around
yes,
the city.
We're all making it work.
It's completely brilliant. And
yeah.
yet I think we don't have social distancing. We have physical distancing.
Yeah.
But I think socially we're drawing together. And that's why I'd much rather use the word physical distancing rather than social distancing.
Absolutely. I agree with that one. Well, thank you so much, Rod. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care.
You too. See ya.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
You certainly